Blog Talk Radio.
We've got film. And we've got psychology. When we put the two together, we've got filmcology. Each week, we will look at the psychology of the characters in film, and it gives us something lovely to think about. So, let's get started. Filmcology is now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the third installment for the Alien Anthology. This movie just, well, it's so historical. I wish that we could, I mean, it would be obviously laborious, but I wish there was some way that our brains could handle watching all four of the main films at one time and then, you know, being able to discuss it along the way and in the end. But this is what we have for now, and so we're just going to go with it. This installment involved just the whole darker division of this whole series, in my opinion. I mean, everything when the emergency evacuation vehicle, the EEV, drops down onto this Fiori planet, it basically was dark and gray. If you saw the theatrical version, you probably didn't get to see the beach and everything. You probably only just saw the vehicle just splash down into the water. But with the extended version that was created in 2003, for the Blu-ray version, which I actually was watching, and watched the main one, but I just kind of wondered what was going to be different in the 2003, so I was watching that today. And that one, you actually see the very beginning shows the ship splash down in the water, but then it gives you a much bigger view of the refinery that was basically no longer in use, and the beach. And the reason it's so dark and sort of disgusting is it's this oil-type refinery, and apparently nobody really cared where all the oil or whatever was. Maybe the big water thing was oil, because the doctor who was on the ship, the medical officer, he was walking along the beach and he noticed the ship, and then he saw something down in the liquid that was washing up on the shore, and it was Lieutenant Ripley completely covered in oil. It was weird looking. And so he picked her up, scooped her up, and ran her back to the main compound where, I don't know, there's some kind of weird bugs that were crawling all over her. They looked like the same little crabette things that were crawling all over her later in the film. But so it was really much more dramatic as you land and you get a real strong sense of the abandonment of the processes of that particular refinery. And it's dark. It just seems dark and dirty. You're underground the whole time. Even though we're in a spaceship for the first couple movies, this one, it's like being in a bunker. And I don't know if you've ever been in a bunker, a war bunker, but they're really dark and they're just, you know, light is a premium because it takes a lot to just overcome that immense darkness. So we have Ripley arrive there. She's still unconscious. And when she does wake up, when she finally comes to, the thing that you see is the the doctor is trying to put a shot into her arm. And the excuse me. It's basically a type of cocktail that will help take off some of the pain and I believe probably help with healing her. So this colony on this refinery is basically full of all these what they call double Y chromosomes. It's all these guys that have, you know, real serious to the DNA level issues with antisocial behaviors, rape, murder, and all kinds of considered horrible crime type behaviors. So these people decided to stay on this rock that have been completely removed from society because they're too dangerous or too horrifying to have in society. So society figured out, I guess, a better way to deal with the prison situations in the future. This is somebody's fictional fantasy for the future. It'll just put all the prisoners on some rock or some planet somewhere else, and that way they can't mess with proper society. So these guys haven't seen a woman in years. They have had no interaction with a woman in years. Yeah, and in even in the beginning, when they're introducing the fact that this woman has crash landed, she's the only survivor, the men are griping and complaining at the first time that they're being alerted to this by the lieutenant who runs the show. The guys there, the first thing they say is, hey, this is bad because we took a vow of celibacy. And that includes women. So they're trying to explain that this is, you know, it isn't some kind of, it's slightly different than what we hear about prisons today here in America. Most of the prisons today in America involve some kind of sort of, homosexual behavior, which they probably don't consider themselves. They probably don't consider it homosexual because they're just stuck with no other options and they do whatever with each other. That's the theory for prisons today. But this place is actually trying to set out in the beginning that that kind of thing doesn't take place. They even say a little bit further into the film, there is a guy that nobody liked. They didn't really show this in the main film, but in this one, they didn't really like. There was two guys that had to light candles, and they didn't want to go out with this one particular guy. And they said, well, he smells bad, and he always smells bad. And they were trying to make their case to Charles S. Dutton's character, who seems to be their spiritual leader. And he said, no, you're going to have to go out with him because, you know, we're short-handed whatsoever. And so they were sort of bothered by that. And they go out. That particular guy ends up getting killed. And the two guys, as they're walking off, one guy says, yeah, I liked him because he never had a problem with me. And he said something like, I loved him. It was like that, you know, like, so there's no sexual things going on with these men whatsoever, and they're even taking it to the point to show you how little there is that something as simple as somebody not complaining about them would evoke feelings of love, which I think is kind of funny and sweet in a weird way. But anyway, folks, let me try to do the whole radio thing here. I get so into this. The show, you're on with Filmcology. It's film with Ike, you know, you heard it at the beginning. The number here is 646-727-2914. And, you know, please call in, join us, and let's get talking about this third in the series. There's a couple of things to talk about. What's different about the first Alien and then the Aliens and then this one? What are the main things that are different psychologically? The other thing is, what exactly are we being shown either about ourselves in current society or what may, quote-unquote, happen in the future? And what are the main themes of these films? I mean, what do you think are the main themes of these films? Obviously, the female protagonist, everything is sort of being funneled through what's happening to her and how she's traversing these obstacles, first encountering the creature, second encountering the creature's baby-making and mothering issues along with her own, and then here we are, third, and we're dealing with sort of how we got to the babies in the first place, and there's a lot of, it brings out the real big sort of rape issue in this third one. Although, if you watch carefully, there were a lot of rape themes going on in the first one and the second one. And this is the first time where we actually see it being a typical rape situation between a man and a woman. Or at least that we, you know, if you could ever call anything to do with rape typical, it's sad that even I could say that. But so it's not between a creature and anything like this. It's between a man, you know, men and a woman. So, okay, we do have a caller on the phone, and if you can jump in whenever you want to jump in, if there's something you want to suggest, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Lydia, right? Right.
Yeah.
You're Lydia today, right?
I am Lydia today, I think.
So, and we also have Nina Manning in the chat room in case you don't want to talk and you just want to join in and say a few things, you know, like my breath stinks or I should wear my hair different. You know, that's fine. Tell Nina all about it. She'd love to hear it, I think. Anyways, so let me get your take on what you think that the main theme of this movie was, just if you'd like to, you know, if you want to think about it and then jump in and tell me what you think, then that's fine, and or if you're ready to tell me.
Well, I think it runs through all of it, and that is like the survival of man, you know, of humankind. The aliens are definitely a force to be reckoned with, and you know. The idiots and the corporation want to bring it to wherever they're living right now. I don't know if they're living on Earth or what, but, you know, they want to bring it back and study it. And, you know, and Ripley knows that they're crazy because these are, you know, very aggressive beings. And it'll, you know, so I think it's like the survival of humans is, for me, one of the central themes.
Yeah.
And it's great
this,
that women, and it's great that women are the, you know, they're the savior.
Yeah, they're the hero in the story is the woman who is constantly sacrificing her own needs
mm-hmm.
for everyone. And that sort of sounds like women in general.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
I never thought
it?
Of that. Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It definitely does.
Yeah. So, but this, it is humankind. And what's good about what Lydia has just said is she's tagging into how these movies were made. This was technically supposed to be the last in the series of the Alien shows, which I'm sure a lot of actors probably have some kind of issues about sequels and prequels and all that. It's just, I mean, most people would probably go to war over making a sequel or a prequel to Citizen Kane, which many people think is one of the greatest movies ever made. But nobody wants to see a sequel to Citizen Kane. People come in and they say, oh, this is sort of, yeah, it'll never happen. And even if it does, it's never going to make it, you know, in any way, shape, or form to carry that on. But this series, everybody, you know, when they came out with the second one, it was like horrific. You could do more with that. Then we come up with three, and Sigourney signed on, and she actually co-produced with the intent that this would be the end, because she's, you know, the end of the film basically is saying, this is it, there's no more. But there's so much more in the background story that they don't really tell you, and that's where they are able to slip in. Well, let's see, now we've had several sequels that are related or spinoffs. So, to me, yeah, it is a fight for humankind, and what's interesting is it's a fight without weapons. So,
yeah.
Which, you know, might be hard for Americans to understand. I mean, other countries probably can handle that, but Americans can't. I mean, it's just like, kill me now, world without guns. How can one survive? Which is interesting because here they are in the future. They have no guns. One of the things that they're actually trying to rely on is fire and some incredibly horrific toxins, toxic substances, like the junk that, you know, corporations are spilling into oceans and dumping in landfills, or if you're Montesano, whatever, you just hide it in our food. I don't even want to say their name right, but yeah, you just dump it in. Okay, I'm not going to get into that political thing, but the point is, human beings can use their brains beyond a high-powered weapon to work through a situation, even when it involves the plight of all humankind. So, here we are. These people are stuck on this rock. They have no way of getting away. So the way I look at this one, it is so, like Lydia said, the end. They're forcing you to deal with it. You can't even get on a ship and run away from it. There's no, it's totally in your face. You're faced with the monster, and even if somebody were to say, well, so what? It's on a rock. Who's going to care? They could just never go to that rock. Well, the reality is this series started with the alien being stored and somewhere that had been there for God knows how many years or eons. And this creature is sort of like a cockroach. It survives. Ooh. And apparently has the ability to simulate either some of the information or of the genes it eats somehow. We don't hear this creature speak to us ever, and yet this creature is constantly thinking on its feet with how to deal with us, to eat us, get around us, even to the point of having a facehugger egg implanted in the emergency, I mean, the vehicle that they were getting away from in two. And I watched it this morning. Lydia was wondering about the cryotubes. One of the things that was real clear in the second version is the cryotubes for the little girl from the last movie, Newt and Ripley, were both cracked open, and then some of the blood from the facehugger actually spilled in. The acid ate away part of the electronics, which basically set the ship into emergency mode. And so the girl, she drowned in her cryo liquid. But Ripley, unfortunately, was impregnated with this creature before the ship released their tubes in an emergency vehicle. Crash landed on this horrific rock. So now we have these guys who apparently hate women. They have extremely misogynistic ways of thinking. They have built their own quote-unquote spiritual, their own spirituality. They've come together where they're completely removed from society, which these are other things that I love about this movie. And they're saying, in the absence of the traditional religions and blah, 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 we still get together and want to believe in a better something or a higher something. And they're trying to aspire to better behaviors and thinking, even though they're where nobody cares about them. It doesn't concern anybody else. They're doing this of their own accord.
Yeah, because they actually they were going to, dissolve that colony, and they chose to stay there.
That's right. You know, based on their...
they're not like fixed, and they know they're not fixed. That's why they're better off without seeing women, because as soon as they see women, we're shown that they can't be trusted all over again.
Yeah, they completely make the choice, which is sort of think of the humanity of these double Y chromosomes, the humanity that's within them to not continue to assault society with, which. How are they going to be fixed? The whole point of the double Y chromosome is that they're really, they're damaged.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's at the DNA level is what they're indicating. These aren't just people who are, my mom, wouldn't diaper me correctly, so I decided to become a rapist. They're starting the whole movie out by telling us that this is, these are the scourge of the earth based on their DNA being irregular. So as we have these men who now have to deal with this new monster, a woman, who's now going to upset the stability of their spiritual realm, look at it as if this was a colony of monks. They were completely away from the rest of the world and all women, and don't engage in television and all that. They don't have access to any of that. And then all of a sudden a woman's there. It's sort of an assault on their sensibilities. So they're getting the alien in the form of the woman. That theme is being carried out into this third film. And then they have to kind of deal with that, which, obviously causes some problems. So they're dealing with that alien, and then Ripley doesn't realize that she's infected initially. And I'm not sure, what did you think about the whole thing, Lydia, of her wanting to have conjugal kind of connection with the doctor? She didn't say it from a point of view of like, I realized that you picked me up and ran me off the beach into the complex and saved me. I'm in love with you. It was not that typical schlock that we see in 1950s all science fiction movies, pretty much before the original Aliens came out in 1979, which 79 is pretty late for that. But anyway, I'm not going to go into that again. So what did you think about that? And she was just like, do you like me in that kind? And he's just like, you're pretty direct. And then you see them waking up in bed together. What did you think about that? Did you think there was any significance to that?
I hadn't really thought of it, although to me it was, she had just gone through this, very emotional day of, seeing Newt and, you know, her little surrogate daughter and all of that, and I just think she needed some physical contact, you know. It seemed like that's, you know, and she is very direct. I like that. I like that about her. But, yeah, I felt like, I don't know if you have another take on it. I really didn't think of it. It just showed me more her humanness, that and then that she was so, you know, she was so sad about, you know, the deaths of her friends.
I love your response. It's such a good sort of matriarchal sort of comforting thought. My thought is probably a little bit more dark, and that is because there are several things out about these movie series where Lieutenant Ripley is really a man, supposed to be a male character, but they just sort of, as one thing said, they co-opted the female character onto this male person, because they don't even, you know, the things I've read, it's like, there's no women that are that strong. Women aren't that way, where they're so cold, and it's like, don't bring that thing on here. We don't know where that thing's been. I mean, how many women say that to their children, to their husbands, to their bosses? Like, you sure that's a good idea? But, of course, normally, because it's a woman saying it, you can gloss over it, or you can figure out a way to blame it on the woman. Here we are, this quote-unquote extremely male female in both Alien 1 and 2. She was sort of tough in 1. In 2, everyone's like, oh, she's just kick-ass, crazy, mean kind of a bitch. Kind of person, and then you know, you sort of see she has a little flirtation with Hicks, but they bring out, oh, she's a mama. She's, you know, lost her baby, who just died a year before she was found, and then now she's going to take on this, adopt this new baby, and if you want to raise the bar, then we have the mama creature and all of her babies. You know, which one is more valid? Mm-hmm. You have that bit, but they make Lieutenant Ripley, everything you see in Aliens, she's holding a gigantic gun with, I mean, practically bigger than she is. And so everything is like, oh, yeah, she's a guy. So how do you make her, you got to get the audience back from the male point of view, and I'm using this, I'm sure you can disagree. From the male point of view, you're going to have to get people to think that she really is still female. And how do you do that? Well, of course, you have sex with her. You know, you got to bring the sex thing in. And it almost takes us right back to the 1950s science fiction movies, because here we're in this dark, you know, depleted place full of Y chromosomes, and yet She asks, he doesn't ask, she asks to have sex. To me, it's really about, and I'm not more right than Lydia's right. I think it's good for us to see these different perspectives, but from my point of view, psychologically, I was like, why did we even have that scene? And it's like,
Huh? They didn't show them having sex, so that was another, you know, incongruency with, you know, I mean, normally that they would be all over that, you know, showing the deed or at least, you know, some part of it, and they didn't go there.
No, but it's implied that they had sex, and and they do it in a really standoffish way, because you want people to believe she's still female, you don't want to lessen her ability to be powerful. And so
I think it's more about the humanness. That's my personal opinion. But you said we can disagree.
Okay. Well.
Yeah. You know, to me it's, you know, I mean, shoot, how long had it been? You know?
I don't know. I mean, hey, I'm...
how long was she up there? The first time they said 50-something years. I mean, the second show, they said, the second movie, they said something about it. She was out in space for 57 years or something like that.
Well, I mean, I have like a timeline in here, and it talks about when Ripley, let's see, she was born. She was
some, honey.
Huh?
She just needed
what?
Some. I think
well,
the reading
you know,
into it.
Listen, I'm just going to say from my point of view, and it's not for, you know, every woman or man or whatever, but if I have been through what she had been through, and now I'm on this ship, and I don't know where I am. The company is maybe sort of coming out, and, you know, and I'm sort of worried that, you know, I see signs, and I'm hearing signs that there was one, part of the creature on the ship. The last
mm-hmm.
thing that I want to do is have sex. And I'm not trying to say that I'm an infomaniac, because I'm far from it, but for me, and most people who know me know, it's like, let's see, what do I love most, sleep or sex? Sleep or sex. And I don't get enough of either. It has a lot to do with my being a, you know, graduate student. It probably has a lot to do with other things. But I don't think that having sex with somebody is connecting me to my humanity. And of the things that would be going through my mind would be how the hell to get off of this rock, what's really lurking around the corners, you know, how many of the people around me are affected, you know, maybe it's me. You know, all those things would be going through my mind. And it wouldn't lend myself to wanting to get down and dirty with someone.
Well,
it seems
well,
out of
what
place.
Was that, what was in that cocktail?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe there's something in that cocktail. So then we move, after we have sex or whatever, then she finds out a little bit more through the dilapidated android. What's his name again? Bishop. So we find out from the dilapidated wreckage of Bishop that there was an alien on board, and that's why the ship went into, you know, pulled them out of stasis and ejected them. And so she asks, which was interesting, she goes, does the company know? And he says, the company knows everything.
Yeah.
That quote-unquote Big Brother thing. We that constant Big Brother, kind of like the devil. It's like, well, the devil exists. We don't really see the devil, but, you know, there's a lot of weird evil things that go on in the world. It's like, yeah, it's got to be from the devil. But none of us generally have seen the devil, right? So here we have the company. The presence is constant, but you never see the company. And now we're being told the company always knows everything. In other words, we can't get away from that part of the evilness of life. It is constantly there. It's disheartening. And so then we, as we move on, progress, she realizes that she's got this creature in her. She's got to figure out what to do about it. She and there's not really anything left for her to do in her mind except to be killed. But unfortunately, they've realized there's another creature running around, killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to be, you know, she's trying to help them help themselves, because it is a horrific story. As a matter of fact, the main guy who is the lieutenant of this whole company, he's the one who gets all the groups together, and he's in charge, and he tells them what's going on. And he says in a meeting with the Lieutenant Ripley and the doctor, so let me see if I get this straight. You, this is a, there's a creature who, for all intents and purposes, is generally it says something like it generally kills you on sight and is a pretty generally unpleasant creature or something. Like, it's so understated. It's like, so he eats you on sight and he's, you know, generally unpleasant.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Just even the way that men sort of talk to women, like, yeah, it's never as bad as they say it is. You know, yeah, right. And, yeah, I can admit, I can attest to poor Gaetano being called at 3 a.m. It's like, it's big as a house and it's coming after me. It's like, honey, what? And it would be like the spider that was, you know, probably 3 centimeters.
Right.
Because yes. I wasn't, I had
not.
Issues.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I had issues with Anansi, and I'm getting better with her. I'm even starting to like the way she looks. But, anyway, women can exaggerate, but guess what? So can men. If you haven't heard about fishtails, it was this big. They use that for all kinds of things where they sort of offshoot the actual size of things, but I won't go into that. Here we go. Now these guys are trying to deal with this creature that at first people think is no big deal, and until that lieutenant who's in charge, he starts to bring it to his men. This is rumor control. That's his favorite thing. This is rumor control. Supposedly, Lieutenant Ripley, blah, 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 blah. You know, because they're thinking that one of the other guys have killed each other after all this time living together in peace. All of a sudden, they're going to start killing each other. And then he gets pulled by the alien right straight up in front of everybody. And now they're all stuck with the fact that even the guy in charge just got ed up. And they're trying to figure out what they're going to do or how are they going to get through this situation. And one guy even said something like, well, why are we helping her? He's like, why are we putting our asses on the line for her? I mean, she's the one that brought the blankety blank. And and she's like, your asses are all on the line. Like, she already knows she's dead. She's already figuring out. She already asked this guy who's played by Charles Hustutton to kill her because she knows that this thing has got to be stopped. But they're still the one that's alive. And these guys just don't quite get it. It's like, and yeah, there's the whole mistrust. You know, most of those people are there because of women, if you think about it. You know, serial rapists, whatever. And so now,
not because of women, but how they treated women.
Well, right. But I don't know. Maybe if there were no women, they wouldn't do that, right? It's sort of saying that since they're on this rock and they're not raping each other.
But they wouldn't be there then.
Yeah. Yeah. There's
and
all sort of...
They took a vow of celibacy, and they alluded to the fact, even with men, here they are with a bunch of men, and they could be having sex with men, but they've decided to take the vow.
Right, right, exactly. So now here's where we're at now. These guys are faced with this monster on top of the female monster, and the other monster is pretty much going to start eating them up until the end. So now how are they going to deal with it when they have no other way? And they basically now they're being told by Ripley, like, no matter what, we can't let this thing live. Which is the theme that Ripley pretty much has brought forward from the other movies. It's just too horrific to be allowed to live. And so I just want to play this little scene that came from the Charles S. Dutton character, because things have now moved into complete seriousness. Like, we're either all going to die and society may live, or we kill this thing and we might live. But there's only one way to look at this, and I'm going to play this and try to listen to the words he says. There's a few expletives in here, folks, so like the F-U-C-K word, just, you know, ignore it and understand the overall of this little speech, which is brilliant. Hold on.
You're all gonna die. The only question is how you check out. Do you want it on your feet? Or on your fucking knees? Begging. I ain't much for begging. Nobody ever gave me nothing. So I say, fuck that thing. Let's fight it.
So here's the big rally and the big push for humanity. And it's not probably even coming from the thought process of we need to save the world. This guy is just fed up with the whole everything. It's almost like I've been battered around, and that here's one more thing that's going to kick me around, and I'm not taking it. I love how he's like, you know, you're going to either take it on your knees or you're going to take it standing up. And, you know, the whole thought of begging, you know, from a society that basically has kicked you to the ends of the earth and you're nothing to them. It's like you want to beg to save yourself and everything for that. I think that his purpose is a little deep, and spiritually I think he's thinking we have to save society. But he still has this sort of, you know, criminal element even in his understanding that, like, I'm just about had it with this crap. And I think that's where the movie kind of states, like, yeah, we've been kicked around by this alien, and it, like, keeps coming back, and, you know, damn it, we're tired of this. This shit's got to end. And so we're all coming to this is the ending in our thought process and the way things are being played out visually on screen. So what's interesting about it, it almost seems like, you know, since she's the only woman. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Lydia, you were saying something to me the other day, which is something I still haven't been able to find out. Remember what you were saying to me about how she's in this movie, one woman who's a heroine with all men? Remember what you were saying?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you go ahead and share that with us?
Well, I was just saying I found it curious. I don't think I've ever seen a movie where there has only been one woman with a bunch of men and she was the star. I think I think that was a first, although I actually did some searching on it, and it either I didn't word it right or something, but yeah, no, I couldn't really find an answer if that was true. You know, I think there's probably been some movies that might have been only women, but not the only woman with a bunch of men.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I was looking too after she posed that question to me. I thought, well, what movie is out there where it's all men and then there was just one woman? I couldn't find it. I couldn't. And even with the Thing series, well, there was a movie by Howard Hawks, and it's called The Thing from Another World. Actually there was more than one woman in that too. And the women were not the main characters. So I've seen all male films. As a matter of fact, The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing that came later, there were no women in that absolutely at all. And I remember watching an interview with one of the actors who said that it was great because we were all just up there and it was all guys. It was just like this real guy camaraderie thing that happened for the whole filming of it. I'm sure there's probably some woman somewhere on that worked on the film, but the actors were all, you know, basically a bunch of guys, you know, bonding, I guess to say. So, yeah, and if you're out there listening to this, folks, you know, and you know that answer, call in 646-727-2914. If you don't call today, you can call next week when we, you know, carry on to the last of the anthology. But so that's the question that's posed out there by Lydia and by me. Is there another film, any kind of genre where it's all men and the main character, the protagonist, is a female? The lead character, the star of the film, is a female, and everyone else on the film is male. So please answer that question. I mean, I know there's some brainiacs out there, a whole bunch of movie file type people, whatever. Find it, because I think she may have hit on something huge, huge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've moved on. We've got the big heartfelt speech. We're going to fight this thing. We're not going to take it. Ripley actually wants to... She's more concerned about getting killed or killing this thing before she becomes just like everybody else, which is, you know, I guess it would be sort of a sad thing for her to befall the same fate that she's been fighting for all these many hundreds of years. But the guys are, you know, they devise a plan to get through this bunker with this creature. And, you know, I still think, okay, what could be creepier than being in a bunker with a creature that you don't even know where it is? It's sort of like me being in my 1,200 square foot place and there's a, you know, 3-centimeter spider something.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, so as these guys transition to now, it's not just a spiritual thing, they're going to fight. The company is on its way. And there's a guy in this film that they call 80 because his IQ is so low.
85.
Was it 85? Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'll give you back your other 5 points.
Okay.
So not really an IQ person, but so yeah. even spiritually, I don't think that he has a concept of the bigger picture until everything. Oh, there's my other co-host. Until everything pops in towards the very end. But the people around him, all these Y chromosomes, are operating in a much higher mental capacity than he is. And even spiritually, I think he's nice, but he's just not very bright. And so then... you're now left with the head in charge guys eaten up. You're left with the what guy that it would fall to, somebody who just hasn't got a clue. And he's running to keep up with the brains of Lieutenant Ripley and the spiritual head of these guys. And this creature thing that he just doesn't, you know, even at the end of the point when she's saying, just contact the company and tell him that I'm dead and to turn back. He's just like, no, I can't do that. You know, it's like the company's not going to harm you. They're gonna find something to help you. It's like he just isn't getting it. You know, he doesn't get it. And at one point, Ripley says to all these guys, listen, we're to them, we're crud. We're nothing. Well, clearly, if you've got all these people with these high educations and flight stuff from all those years ago that you would think as expendable, you're not going to care about these people that you basically sort of keep alive barely, and you know, you don't you don't give them any pleasantries.
Right.
Nothing. So now we're at pretty much the end of the movie. Ripley is the guy who was supposed to kill her. He ends up fighting the creature when all the lead is getting ready to be poured. And so there goes her other hope of being murdered. And she couldn't kill herself. I wonder sometimes if that had something to do with the creature controlling her chemical makeup or her brain in some manner. Because what's inside her is a queen. And they intimate that. Yeah. In other words, they've, sort of like bees, you have the ones that are given the royal jelly and they become queens, and then there's the ones that are just worker bees. But this one's a queen. And so the one that's been running around killing people is protective of that queen. Jumping back to the one scene where Ripley is sitting in the infirmary and the creature comes up to her.
That's my favorite scene.
It was horrifying when I first saw it. And it puts its head in that whole slimy mess right up to her cheek, throws out its little proboscis mouth, and doesn't do anything to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it just grabs a body to eat and leaves. So, so this creature is not trying to kill Ripley at all. I mean, in some ways, I would imagine it's probably looking to protect her and or basically the queen that's growing inside of her. And so when Ripley was actually looking for it, she figured she'd kill the beast that's running around. She makes a statement where she says, "You've been in my life so long, I can't imagine a time when you weren't in it."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, this is the statement that takes us back to the very beginning of the movie, the very beginning of this whole series. It's telling us the alien is the alien, and so is the woman, who's a powerful woman. Not because she's a woman, but because she's a powerful woman, and she's an alien. Now in the third, we're being told, yeah, basically, you're the same. You know, there was never, it's almost like they were never separated. They're basically the same monster. They're both alien. And so I liked how they sort of wrapped that up at the very end. They're trying to tell you something about the way women are perceived in society. Not in the future. Because it's now. You know, our science fiction films are showing us how we feel about things now. Otherwise, I think this movie would have come off differently in the things that they say. So
I think it was
she's at the point where the company arrives, and there was a big surprise on that one. The company arrives, and she's, you know, they're killing the creature. They finally trap him in this hot lead from the works, the refinery, and they trap the creature, but the creature is still emerging from this hot lead. The body's so overheated, and then they drop the water on it, which causes the intense stress fractures of cold, the cold to hot dynamic, and so it splits apart, and you know, you're sort of thinking, okay, great, that's done. Now Ripley has to deal with what's inside her. And the guy that made the speech about, you know, who cares about her, he's the one that ends up helping her. And while the guy 85, who isn't very bright, he's welcoming the company, but he's starting to sort of understand how bad this creature is. And he actually sort of believes that they're going to do the right thing, as if the company only cares for all of our better good, until he hears how they're talking to Ripley, and they're really just trying to get her so that they can get the specimen out of her. And who shows up, which I thought was a huge surprise, but Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
And he even says, the company sent me, you know, have a familiar face. And it's like, oh, you're another android. And it's like, no, I'm the one that made Bishop. I am Bishop. Like, oh, that was freaky.
If you believe it.
Oh, huh?
If you believe that.
Right.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then he comes up with the, oh, no, we're going to take that out of you, you know, so you can still... He said, you can still have a full life. And didn't he say something like, I'm trying to remember.
You can have children. He says,
right.
You can have children, like that's her only function in life, you know. He thinks that's going
right.
to get her.
And, you know, that's another thing, like, I don't know about if there's anyone out there who's married or whatever. Well, you hear all those things about, oh, yeah, after she had her child, after our first child, then I was just nothing. You know, men complain about that, how all of a sudden they're sort of relegated to the back of the line because now there's a baby in front. I mean, there's just so many things going on about the whole thing about motherhood. Like, if you were to just look at 1, 2, and 3, you'd be like, okay, women are evil and alien, and women who are strong are alien and creepy and bitches. And then, let's see, women that are mothers are evil and creepy because they're going to protect their baby over everything. And then we get here, and it's like, yeah, we'll go ahead and take that baby you're carrying now and allow you to have other babies. You know, in a society that probably would be overrun with aliens, who knows. So all this, and then Ripley decides to just drop herself anyway into the molten lead.
Lead.
And at the very end, I don't know what you're thinking if you watched it, how you see the whole thing about the symbolism. Lydia and I were talking about that. How maybe you should say what you said, because it was really brilliant what you were saying about the difference with the little baby emerging from her chest.
Yeah, well, I'm so brilliant, I always forget what I say, but...
okay.
I was saying that, you know, first, you know, her arms are outstretched as if she is sacrificing herself, and we made allusions to, you know, the crucifixion. But then
right.
she actually, you know, she puts her hands around the baby, and it, you know, because it starts coming out of her chest, and I felt that there was two thoughts. One was she's trying to keep it from flying away, but she wasn't choking it or struggling with it. She had her arms around it, and I think that it was, I do believe she was not wanting it to get away, but. Also, I just think that it wasn't as violent as it could be, you know, like a big struggle at the end. She was taking that baby with her, you know, and it felt to me that she had some maternal instincts there towards it.
Yeah, it did seem to me like it was nurturing. So,
mm-hmm.
So then this would be the end initially of the whole series. Where basically Ripley has to confront her, you know, her motherhood and, you know, who she is. It's part of her. Maybe it was always part of her because she was sort of seen as an alien, and now she's got her alien. You know, the symbolism of it is huge to me. And so now she's being killed off. I mean, it's kind of in that, I mean, the symbolism of the one woman, the one who's trying to help, you know, society survive, she's killed off in this all-male cast. As a matter of fact, none of the people who even come in from the company appear to be women. And so now society, you know, which, you know, presents this whole series of the alien creature, has now eradicated it thanks to the woman who just took herself out then to take out all of humanity. Sort of weird. A lot of gender issues, a lot of thematic things about motherhood, rape, babies, all that. Anyway, that was three, folks. We are out of time. A few things before we go. Next week we're going to be doing Alien Resurrection, the movie that wasn't initially planned. And so it'll be interesting to see how they sort of pull things either back out or put things back in, and what the hope is, what it says about our future. You know, here's the movie that wasn't planned. Are women going to be looked at differently? Are they going to be talked about differently? Is it going to still be stereotypical? Interesting. You'll have to watch the movie, Alien Resurrection. Hop back in here and tell us what you think. Please don't forget that question. Find the movie, tell us, so we can discuss that too. And before we go, also I want to talk about the quick lineup of what's coming up for the Essence of Success Radio Network. Tomorrow is Friday, and Lennis will be here for the Friday night traffic jam. It's about 30 minutes of really cool, funky, different kind of music, and she's always funny and sweet about it, and puts shout outs, and you can call in her show and, you know, give a shout out to somebody you might want to, or maybe a shout out to your husband or wife, like, I'll meet you at home for a little afternoon delight or something. And then Saturday we have Lydia's show. Go ahead, Lydia, tell us about Time to Love.
Yep. Spiritual Spring. Happy spring, by the way. It's the first day of spring. And so I'm going to be talking about, it's a time for new growth, for rebirth, all of those issues, and how it relates to loving ourselves. So hopefully that'll be a great show that we can all get behind and call in and talk about how maybe you're going through some rebirth issues.
Oh, man, I could got something to say about that. And so I will be there. I will be there at 2 o'clock my time. It'll be 3 Mountain Daylight Time.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 o'clock Eastern Time, right? No, 5 o'clock Eastern Time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And then on Sunday, Lennis is going to have in the studio, she's going to be talking about, it's going to be about books. So call in, share about your favorite books. Maybe you got first editions. Maybe you got just call and talk about your favorite books. Like, she's kind of targeting physical books, but, you know, you have stuff on your Kindle, but sort of like book files. I don't know the correct word for somebody who's really into books, but people like that, call and share with us. And I thank you for coming in, everyone. I think that it. Or did we need to?
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, I think you covered it. Oh, Monday night. Monday night is R&B, Passage to Empowerment, and we'll be talking in the spring theme. We'll be talking about spring cleaning, and that is at 9 o'clock Mountain Standard, so 8 o'clock Pacific, and you do the rest. Yeah,
right.
Just make sure. We are on every day of the week now, and so, there's something for everybody. Come on, listen every day. Stay tuned to
folks.
The Essence of Success.
Yeah. Got an hour out of your life, and it can help set you back on your path. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Love you guys. Take care.
Love you, too.
Watch those movies. Think about them.
Love you.
Okay. Bye. Thanks,
Lydia. Bye. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Nina.